Then Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and curing every disease and every sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." Then Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to cure every disease and every sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, also known as Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Canaan, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him.
And the rest of the reading goes this way. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: "Go nowhere among the Gentiles and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You received without payment, give without payment." Holy wisdom, holy word.
Thanks.
So, first of all, we should probably address the bigoted elephant in this text. Jesus says to the disciples, don't go to those Samaritans and don't go to those Gentiles, but just go to the people of Israel. Now, it's hard to figure out exactly what Matthew's Jesus is getting at here. The Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Mark and the Gospel of Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels. They're connected because Mark, the oldest Gospel, is used as a foundation for Matthew and Luke. So you can find big chunks of Mark and Matthew and Luke. They tweak it a little bit, but they're using Mark. In Mark's Gospel, there isn't this thing about don't go to the Samaritans and don't go to the Gentiles. And in Luke's Gospel, it's not there either. It's only in Matthew's Gospel. And I wish I could say I know exactly why he did it, but I can't. I can say, though, that at the end of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, gives instructions to the disciples to go out
earth to everyone and make disciples. So whatever limitations he was putting on the disciples here, by the end of the gospel, he's taken them all away and he's sending people in every direction to talk to everyone. Maybe there's a reason why Matthew got a focus on Jewish people first. Maybe we can talk about that if we have time at the end. But the heart of it is the instruction to do what Jesus did. Jesus was going around from place to place, proclaiming the realm of God. Matthew calls it the kingdom of heaven, because Matthew doesn't like to say the word God, but it's the same as the kingdom of God in the other gospels. To go around proclaiming the kingdom of God and cure the sick, raise the dead, chase out demons. Jesus finds that there's too much work and he's just one person. So He commissions the disciples to go and do what he's been doing. He's not asking them to do something he hasn't already done. So Jesus commissions them to go and proclaim this word that the kingdom of heaven has come near. And sometimes we hear that and we think we know what they're talking about, but it's important to step back from that phrase and say, well, what exactly does that mean? What is the kingdom of heaven? It can't be a place because places don't come near. Oskaloosa, Iowa is a nice place. I've been there, has a great bakery. You should go sometime. But you don't have to worry about going asleep tonight and waking up in Oskaloosa, Iowa. It's not going to sneak up on you. It's there. It's going to stay there. It's not going to come near. And it's also not an event. A lot of times we talk about the realm of God, the kingdom of God, as this thing that's going to happen. And sometime in the distant future, it's going to fall on us, and it's just going to be there, and God's just going to give it to us. It's going to be an event. But if events don't come near, we don't say, oh, Christmas came near this year. It's not about an event. So what is it? Well, I believe what it is a choice. That what Jesus is doing from place to place and place, and what he's sending the disciples to do from place to place to place, is to offer people a choice. The first part of that choice is this idea, this title, the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. People in those times knew about kingdoms, and they were places, and they were ruled by kings, and they were all pretty much the same, wealthy. And the powerful had one lifestyle, and the poor and miserable had another. But what is a kingdom that's ruled by the God of compassion and justice look like? Suddenly, it seems like maybe there's an alternative. And that's the choice. That's a choice that sits at the heart of the Gospels. I think of it like this. When I was a kid, and maybe this is true for you, it's certainly still true in this neighborhood, in the summer, you'll hear this loud, obnoxious music playing, and you know that the ice cream truck is coming. And you hear the music when you're a kid, and you run to your parents to get some money, or you go to your piggy bank and get some money, and you grab it and you go out to the curb and you wait for the ice cream man because he's going to bring ice cream. The disciples are sort of like the ice cream guy. They're coming to town and they're letting you know that ice cream is available. Now, the ice cream guy, if you hear the music, it doesn't mean that the ice cream guy is going to come up to your steps, knock on your door, and hand you a fudgesicle. You've got to go and buy the fudgesicle. You've got to put some effort into it. You've got to make a choice about how you're going to prioritize your time and resources if you want that fudgesicle. And that's what the disciples are doing. They're offering people a choice. The other things that are listed here, the curing the sick, chasing out demons, raising the dead, these are kind of they serve two purposes. One, they're the loud, obnoxious music that the ice cream vendor plays. They're gaining attention to the message, which is that the realm of God is near. It's here. It's at hand. It's a choice you can make. The realm of God is at hand. all of those things that they're doing are also indicating what the realm of God looks like. That the things that people were enduring weren't necessarily things that they needed to endure. The realm of God is at hand. That maybe there is a different way of living. Maybe this realm of God promises a much different way of living. The message is important. It's important because we tend to take the world that we're handed for granted. We all do that. We talk about it here with the phrase domination system, but it has lots of different names. But basically, it's the idea that we accept this world as it is and don't really spend a lot of time thinking about what the radical alternative to the way of the world is and how we can make that happen. That's what sits at the heart of this text. So if you're living in a social order, that's pretty much the same since civilization began. Generally, there are the people who have power, and there are the people who don't have as much power. And generally, the people who have power have more rights and resources than the people who don't. Now, if they only have a little bit more, and everybody in the community is basically happy with the way things are, they have sufficient rights and resources to live full, productive, happy lives, then there's no real outcome. There's no real outcry for change. But if the world has people who are a great deal of wealth and power and people who are suffering from a lack of basic rights and resources, then we got to ask ourselves, why do people let that stand? Well, people in power make that stand, and they make it stand for everybody else in three primary ways. One is violence. So if you're a kid and you've got lunch money, the bully comes up to you, punches you, and takes your lunch money. Violence. The other is fear. The bully comes to the guy standing next to you and says, "You saw what I did to that guy. If you don't give me your lunch money, I'm going to do it to you." So you hand over your lunch money because you don't want to happen to you what happened to that person. You're afraid, and so you hand over your lunch money. Fear. And the third is consent. You go to school and you find that everybody's lining up and handing the bully the lunch money, their lunch money, and you hand it over because, well, that's what everybody is doing. Now, violence is not cost efficient. It takes a lot of energy to employ violence directly all the time. If you're a bully and you have to punch people every time you get lunch money, after a while, your hand starts to hurt. And fear is much more efficient, but it still takes energy. You have to punch a few people to keep the fear stoked. But then you also have to threaten each person, and that takes time and energy. But if you can just stand there with a bag and people just drop their lunch money in it because that's what people do, well, that's easy. And that's what happens in social orders. People, a way of doing things is created that eventually everybody just acknowledges is the way it's done. We call it common sense. We call it the will of God. We call it natural order. We call it lots of phrases stuck to it, but it means we're doing this because everybody's always been doing this. Political scientists call this cultural hegemony. It means creating an order that is beneficial to people in power and making that the culture. What Jesus is doing is breaking in to the cultural hegemony of his time and saying, there's another way. We don't have to give the bully our money. We don't have to live in fear. We don't have to accept violence. That's the heart of the message. That is the heart of the gospel. That's just as true today as Jesus was navigating the Roman Empire, as it was for Jesus when he was navigating the Roman Empire. It's just as true today. We live in a world where we feel as if we don't have power to change anything, that the way it is the way it's going to be. Now, it's true. I don't hear of anybody raising the dead anymore. It hasn't popped up in the news for as long as I can remember. I mean, we would note it. So it doesn't seem like people empowered by Jesus these days are doing that sort of a thing. So maybe for us, that's a metaphor. Maybe this idea of curing the sick and chasing out demons is addressing what happens to us when we accept as normal a world that's filled with violence, when we accept as normal a world that's filled with injustice, when we accept as normal a world where people live with multiple mansions and other people live in tents. Maybe, just maybe, all of that fear and anxiety about the way things are and the worst way they're going to be makes people sick, stresses them to the point where they are physically sick. Maybe they turn in their distress and their hopelessness to the demons of drugs and alcohol. Maybe we are living in a world that needs that healing touch. And that healing is the message. The message that we proclaim with our mouths when we have no other choice, but mostly with our lives, with everything that we do, that there is a better world and that better world is possible. We do not have to walk like zombies towards a future filled with climate catastrophe and dissolving nations and fear and all of the things that grow around us. We do not have to take as normal the need to have guns to protect ourselves from our neighbors. We do not need to take as normal children being killed in their schools. There's another way. And that's the work of people who choose to follow Jesus, to proclaim that other way, to figure out every cool and crazy way they can make that obnoxious noise that brings people to the realization that they have a choice. They can bring the love of God into places where it makes people uncomfortable. They can bring the love of God into places like politics and economics. They can bring it into family relationships, and they can bring it into the way we've always done things. This is the work. This is the dream. And for us, and for the world, it's good news.